The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink and criminalize our
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nice to have you here. It's Tuesday, November 27th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks, and welcome to the Russ Belville Show. We're so glad to have you here at RadicalRuss.com, TheWeedBlog.com, Pot.TV, and other fine marijuana community websites across the internets. Just visit our blog at RadicalRuss.com, look under About and Webmaster Tools, and you can embed our show on your webpage as well. We've got all sorts of interesting things to cover in today's show, mostly about the mainstream media finally taking some notice of things we've been talking about here on the Russ Belville Show for months and years. We're going to take a look at ABC News today at half past the hour, which has taken a look at medical marijuana for children and the case of Brave Michaela out here in Oregon. Also mentions Cash Hyde and Miko Hester Perez's child, Joey, as well. So something we've covered a long time. They also interviewed Dr. Lester Grinspoon, one of the first doctors to use medical marijuana on his own child. We'll bring that all to you at half past the hour. In other mainstream media, the Huffington Post has finally noticed the phenomenon that we christened stoners against this legalization. The people who have a vested interest in the status quo of medical marijuana, who then go on to fight marijuana legalization themselves. So glad they noticed that. And I'll put my Lieutenant Aldo Rain hat on and talk about that in the Radical Rant. Also, at 20 after, today is Electric Tuesday. We got some new music from Japan. My good friend Gomyo with the Hoodie Monks has sent me a new track called Roll With Me, and we'll play that in our Electric Tuesday for you here, Gomyo and the Hoodie Monks. But first, we'll get it all started with our 420 headline news. All sorts of interesting stories in the headline news today, including the results of marijuana decriminalization in California and how that's affected juvenile arrests. We'll get a look at Amendment 64 in Colorado and how Colorado Normal is going to be speaking with Governor Hickenlooper on rolling out, if you'll pardon the pun, Amendment 64. Mexico's president-elect Peña Nieto goes to war with the U.S. on the drug war. And we get Humboldt State University launching a new institute dedicated to marijuana research. All that and more, including Toker Talk Radio in Hour 2, where we'll take your calls and you can be a part of the voice of the marijuana nation. Hey, stick around. We'll be right back after some messages.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights.
Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
The Russ Belville Show.
I'm not very good at singing songs, but here's a try.
According to lifelong pot smoker and rocket scientist Carl Sagan, making apple pies from scratch is extremely difficult.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe.
Radical Russ and the Rolla J Studios crew will be right back after these messages.
A morning filled with 400 billion suns, the rising of the Milky Way. Cosmos is full beyond me.
Now it's time for your 420 headline news. I'm Russ Belville. Marijuana decriminalization law brings down juvenile arrests in California, reporting from truthout.org. Marijuana is one of the primary reasons why California experienced a stunning 20% drop in juvenile arrests in just 1 year between 2010 and 2011, according to provocative new research. The San Francisco-based Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice recently released a policy briefing with an analysis of arrest data collected by the California Department of Justice's Criminal Justice Statistics Center. The briefing, California Youth Crime Plunges to an All-Time Low, identifies a new state marijuana decriminalization law that applies to juveniles, not just adults, as being the driving force behind this plummeting arrest total. After the new pot law went into effect in July 2011, simple marijuana possession arrests of California juveniles fell from almost 15,000 in 2010 to just below 6,000 in 2011, a 61% difference, the report by the senior research fellow Mike Males found. California's 2010 law did not legalize marijuana, but it officially knocked down simple possession of less than 1 ounce to an infraction from a misdemeanor. And it applies to minors, not just people over 21. Police don't arrest people for infractions, usually they ticket them. And infractions are punishable not by jail time, but by fines, a $100 fine in California in the case of less than 1 ounce of pot. Before the passage of the 2010 law, Californians caught with less than an ounce of pot were arrested by the thousands every year, ultimately facing a fine of $100 and, under certain conditions, referral to drug treatment or education. Many of those arrested were booked, others were released but required to appear in court. They could demand a trial. Strained courts had to take up time ordering diversion treatment programs, a waste of court resources, the supporters of reform said. Amendment 64, marijuana consumers need a seat at the table, says Colorado Normal, reporting from westward.com. The passage of Amendment 64 will require government officials to establish rules for an entirely new industry. In advance of this step, representatives from the Colorado branch of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or NORML, are scheduled to meet tomorrow with representatives of Governor John Hickenlooper. The goal? To ensure that the voice of cannabis consumers is heard loud and clear throughout the process. This information comes from attorney Sean McAllister, a member of the NORML Legal Committee and a longtime advocate for progressive marijuana policies. Tomorrow, folks from Colorado Normal and the governor's legal team will chat informally about the amendment and the road ahead. McAllister stresses, quote, Normal is going there with a positive message. We're going to point out that a majority of the voters voted for this and want this implemented, and we feel the process should be open. Mexico's Peña Nieto goes to U.S. with drug war on the agenda, reporting from Time.com.
President Obama and Mexican President-elect Enrique Peña Nieto already had more than enough on their bilateral agenda. Mexican President-elect Enrique Peña Nieto says it may be time to reassess the drug war. In an interview with Time, Peña has made his first direct remarks on the U.S. marijuana legalization measures and how they complicate a four-decade-old drug interdiction strategy that had widely been branded a failure in both Mexico and the U.S. Like a growing number of Latin American leaders, including Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos, one of the Obama administration's closest allies in the region, have said much the same thing this year. Some, like Guatemalan President Otto Perez Molina, have even proposed drug legalization. Uruguay is set to legalize marijuana. That trend, aimed at depriving violent drug gangs of part of their narco wealth, reflects growing exasperation with a drug war that is fueled largely by incorrigible U.S. consumption, but wreaks its mayhem mostly in Latin America, where Mexico has seen 60,000 drug-related murders in the past 6 years. College launches research institute devoted to pot from CBSNews.com. A public university located in one of California's prime pot-growing regions has formed an academic institute devoted to marijuana. The Humboldt Institute for Interdisciplinary Marijuana Research at Humboldt State University plans to sponsor scholarly lectures and coordinate research among 11 faculty members from fields such as economics, geography, politics, psychology, and sociology. Politics professor Jason Plume is giving a lecture on the marijuana reform movement on Tuesday night, one of seven public talks the Institute plans to host this year. And that's your 420 headline news for today, Tuesday, November 27th, 2012. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines and take a look at MPP's leader, Rob Campia, and his top 10 lessons learned from Colorado legalization. We'll be right back after these messages.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
Seven major party candidates to run for president, three of the last seven vice presidential candidates, and the last three presidents have all smoked pot. Marijuana, the gateway drug to the White House. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Oh, thank you, Dan Michaels. And as we go to our behind the headlines, I think of that commercial. I'm reminded now that the last six presidential elections have been won by the pot smoker. All right, we're going to go behind the headlines here and take a look at lessons for legalizers. There's a great post up on Huffington Post written by MPP's Rob Campia, and he's explaining what the 10 lessons are to be learned from legalization in Colorado. And here are the 10 things he thinks are most important that we as marijuana legalizers should learn. Number one, presidential election, right? You want to do it during a presidential election. He says, we intentionally chose to place our initiative on the ballot during a presidential election, which always attracts a larger proportion of young voters who are more supportive. Okay. So he's saying, basically you should wait till 2016 if you want to legalize. Number two, inclusive drafting process. The team that drafted the initiative went out of its way to solicit feedback from key lawyers, medical marijuana industry players, and other organizational leaders and unaffiliated activists. As a result, there was almost no infighting. Okay, you could say that. I think really the reason there was no almost no infighting had to do with the language and, you know, not putting things in there that would lead to infighting.
I'm hoping that that came across because of the people that you included in the drafting process. That seems to make sense. Years of groundwork is number three. It says officially the Colorado campaign was 2 years long, but really it was like 8 years long, because in 2004, MPP's grants launched Safer and Sensible Colorado. Of course, Mason Tavert, the leader of Safer, Brian Vincente, the leader of Sensible Colorado, they ended up becoming the co-directors of the marijuana legalization campaign. It talks about how Safer focused on public education, that marijuana is safer than alcohol, had two related marijuana initiatives in Denver in 2005 and 2007, and did statewide legalization in 2006, a non-presidential election year, I'd note, and got a lot of the debate going about legalizing marijuana. Sensible Colorado fought for medical marijuana access and had court challenges to allow caregivers to be paid and so forth. So they've been doing it for a long time. They just didn't just jump right into it. 8 years of work to get legalization passed. Number four, early fundraising. The campaign cost approximately $2.3 million, more than half of which was raised prior to 6 months before Election Day. This would be the number one lesson that Oregon activists could learn from this, is you got to have your money early. He uses the acronym EMILY. Early money is like yeast. And because of having the early money, number five, they could do early ad buys. Because we had early money, we were able to buy our October airtime at a cheaper rate than if we'd been forced to write checks for the ads in October, right? They'll get your ad buys done early when it costs you less. And targeted ad buys. This is number six. A couple of years before Election Day, public opinion polling already indicated a majority of Colorado men supported legalization. So we directed our women at directed our ads mostly at women and additional ads to Hispanics and conservatives. So, right, go after the people that don't support you. Number seven, just three messages. Number one, police should spend their time on more important things. Number two, taxing marijuana would turn a money-losing prohibition into a money-generating system. And number three, veterans with PTSD should be able to use marijuana. Three messages. Number eight, correct spokespeople, Betty Aldworth, Mason Tavert, and Brian Vincente. And then he closes with, we didn't allow just anyone to speak at the microphone. And this is definitely something we could learn here in Oregon, and did learn it toward the end of the campaign, as Roy Kaufman ended up doing a lot of the speaking for the campaign. A great, great spokesperson. Correct campaign intelligentsia talks about the inner circle of people that had worked on previous campaigns and had some experience with this. This is one place where I think we failed. We didn't have enough people with experience who'd actually done these things to organize the campaign. And number 10, finally, undercutting the opposition. He talked about how whenever the opposition would go out, you know, the cops or the sheriffs, and would speak against it, they would always have one of their spokespeople there to speak to the media so that at least both sides of the issues would be promoted. But at the end of this, Rob ends by saying, to that point, there are already well-meaning activists in Oregon and other states who aren't remembering the efforts of well-meaning activists in California who ignored the lesson of step one, the presidential election year, and pushed a risky initiative during a non-presidential election in 2010, which I'm sure felt good, but succeeded at failing. That's one where I have to get in here and I have to make a comment to this, because, you know, I'm one of these well-meaning activists in Oregon that thinks we should move forward for 2014. And I'd note that the work of the well-meaning activists in California with Prop 19 did not fail, but succeeded in two very important ways, without which Colorado legalization would not have passed. And number one, the leverage of legalization gaining traction sped a decriminalization bill through to Governor Schwarzenegger's desk, which I just told you in the news reduced juvenile arrests by 20% in 1 year. People saw the effects of a legalization campaign in California. They heard the talk about that. And that's number two. It moved the public to be ready for debating legalization in 2012 in Washington, Oregon, and Colorado. And because they went forward in 2010, they had current exit polling that showed that they needed to do something about the fears of WOTC and SMOF. What about the children and stoned mayhem on the freeways that led Colorado and Washington to craft their language in such a way that it would appeal to the women and the conservatives and the people that were afraid of voting for legalization? As far as I'm concerned, Oregon in 2014 is not Colorado, is not California in 2010. We got to have, number one, we need fewer signatures to get on the ballot. Our ad buys cost a whole lot less.
most of our population, and all of our largest city is within an hour's drive of what will be 2 years of legal marijuana, or almost 2 years of legal marijuana in Washington state, and all the money that flows out of state from that. We all vote by mail here in Oregon. That changes the dynamics a whole bunch. And we're going to have a high-profile gubernatorial race in 2014 that's going to generate a lot of media coverage. Legalization's not a pipe dream anymore. It actually exists, and so now it's a valid policy choice. It's something that can win in an off-election year. It is never a mistake to run a legalization initiative. For example, MPP in Colorado in 2006 when it wasn't a presidential election year. It is only a mistake to run one badly, like we did here in Oregon in 2010. Oregon activists can't wait another 4 years and thousands of marijuana arrests later to legalize. And there are a few more deep pockets than just Peter Lewis now who want to get in on the legal marijuana game. And that's what I have to say about that. I understand the patience and wanting to wait till 2016, but I think on the West Coast, there's no need to wait anymore. Full steam ahead, let's legalize.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Hi, this is Dan Michaels. If you're looking for professional voice talent for your commercial or podcast, I'm your man. Visit danmichaelsaudio.com for more information. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after a word from these 420 friendly sponsors. Wait a minute. This is internet radio. There are no dials here. Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Electric Tuesday, featuring the latest in electronic dance music and other cutting-edge genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
Well, just when I was lamenting last week about how tough it is for me to find Electric Tuesday music, I got an email from my friend in Japan. That's right, Gomyo from the Hoodie Monks is back to bring us some more music. And, you know, I love the stuff that he's putting out here because, you know, it's got a hip-hop feeling. It's kind of got an electronic vibe going to it as well. But there's something about it coming from Japan as well that adds some kind of Asian influence to the music that just makes it very unique. I love this guy's stuff. Now, if you haven't heard Gomyo before and what the Hoodie Monks are, well, he is an actual Shingon Buddhist monk. And he's a street artist. In fact, the art right there, I believe, is something that he put together. He's been rapping for many years, been active since 1991, as a matter of fact, and has been using rap and hip-hop to introduce both Japanese and English-speaking audiences to Buddhist thought and practice. So if you actually listen to his flow, hear some of the lyrics here, you hear a lot of Buddhist themes in his music. Hoodie Monks, as he expresses it, is just a Buddhist in a hip-hop world, right? Is it a hip-hop Buddhist, in a sense, wearing his hoodie rather than the old-style robes that the old Buddhist monks used to wear. So let's get to it. This is some music from our friend Gomyo, big supporter of the show, the Hoodie Monks out there in Japan. This is Roll With Me. We'll be right back.
shot. With the weed, we'll make the big blunt bleed. The THC, you're raising all down. Getting the first round, or maybe two or three, but it's a long ride into town. So get your stash out or pull some cash out or something. Fill up the tank and free me up to grab another bag of dank, so we can keep it lit up as we get up on our bank.
Grab your bag, come roll with me. I'm taking all the y'all on the road with me. Get in if you want to ride. Grab your bag, come roll with me. I'm taking all the y'all on the road with me. Smoke that shit inside. You and me, we got lots to see, but no one rides for free. So pull your stash out. With the weed, we'll make the big bump. The THC, we're raising all down.
The shit that keeps you up at night. Inhale, exhale, pass left, that's right. Repeat at least two more times. As many as required, as many as you like. It's a non-toxic herb and there is no lethal dose. It's a cool burning fire so you never sit too close. So huddle up and warm your hands. Inhale the smoke that's been shared since the first man. And even earlier if I don't miss my guess. By other animals and on other planets. Cause I'm on another planet every time I'm smoking. One with less gravity and lots more joking. Keep it light, take it slow. The tortoise beats the hare every time I read that book, you know.
Grab your bag, come roll with me. I'm taking all the y'all on the road with me. Get in if you want to ride. Grab your bag, come roll with me. I'm taking all the y'all on the road with me. Smoke that shit inside.
You and me, we got lots to see, but no one rides for free. So pull your stash out. With the weed, we'll make the big bump. The THC, we're raising all down.
As we hit the edge of town, we wanna keep the smoke in the smoke aquarium, so don't roll your window down. We wanna keep the tank full as we proceed to the club for rehearsal, feeling thankful that we're doing what we love and getting paid. These songs have to be born and there is no other way. It's like I told you, I get it. The song is gonna be the song and we just have to let it. Grab your bag, come roll with me. I'm taking all the y'all on the road with me. Get in if you wanna ride. Back on roll with me. I'm taking all of y'all on the road with me. Let's smoke that shit inside.
You and me, we got lots to see, but no one rides for free. So pull your stash out. With the weed, we'll make the big bump. The THC, we're raising all down.
Technically, it's cannabis sativa, the common name, marijuana. She has found a crutch to see her through her difficulties instead of facing up to them and coping with them. And in time, she may be ready to try something different, something better.
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
NARML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs. activism begins with ACT. The Rush Belleville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
All right, welcome back, everybody. And today we're going to turn things over to ABC News' 2020 program, which is investigating the use of medical marijuana for children. It's something that's come as a huge surprise to them, but something we've been covering here at the Russ Belleville Show for quite a long time. So we'll get to that right away.
Giving kids the message, just say no to drugs. So why would a mother convince her 12-year-old to take marijuana? Sounds outrageous, but she says it's for his own good. Is it? Here's Chris Connolly.
The minutes of 12-year-old Ryan's day are filled with emotional turbulence and self-destructive behavior. Bouts of rage or panic.
I don't want to go on the ground.
Self-loathing and lethargy. He is living a nightmare, and so is his mother.
Judy, how old was Ryan when you started seeing this kind of behavior that troubled you?
He was 6 years old. He was in the first grade.
Judy Mendoza never imagined that her son would develop such an array of debilitating syndromes, including severe obsessive compulsive disorder.
Open the door.
He became completely incapacitated and incapable of functioning in the regular world. A couple of weeks ago, I pulled into the driveway and he came running out of the house, threw himself down on the hood of my car, said, I want you to kill me. I want you to run me down. I don't want to live anymore. I can't take this OCD anymore.
What's it like when your son says, I don't want to live anymore?
It's the worst thing you could ever hear as a mother. It really is. You want to do anything you can to take your child's suffering away.
Judy says Ryan is pathologically afraid of the wind, of the number six. Ryan was pulled out of school earlier this year and spends much of his day with an aide, playing video games, as he did with me.
Wait a minute, I'm bleeding. That's not good.
Judy says Ryan was treated with a host of drugs and therapies, yet nothing soothed her son. That is what led her to take an astonishing step and give her 12-year-old boy medical marijuana.
My first gut reaction was, oh my God, that seems really out there. That seems drastic, but I don't want to do all these antipsychotic medications anymore. They don't seem to be helping. And I thought to myself, what do I really have to lose?
Judy lives in California, one of 14 states where medical marijuana is legal, purchased with a doctor's okay at one of these dispensaries. Kids don't smoke the drug. It hardly resembles marijuana as it's infused into butter or bread or into a tincture that can be placed under their tongue.
It's like it just takes the edge off of his OCD. It's not like the OCD goes away when he has this medicine, but his ability to cope with it changes.
And what are those moments like for you then?
Heaven, because I get my little boy back.
Judy's not the only one trying medical marijuana on her kid. In fact, she says she got the idea from watching this Good Morning America story. Miko Hester Perez says her 11-year-old, Joey, who has autism, had shrunk to 46 pounds before receiving the drug.
I saved my son's life, and marijuana saved my son's life.
Severe autism so confounds modern medicine that any treatment might seem understandable. But giving pot to a preteen with OCD? Is that why they call it dope?
The only dope in this story is Chris Connolly. Is that why they call it dope? It's like they can't resist. It's like news people are just, they're trained at Columbia School of Journalism. Whenever the story's about marijuana, they've got to make some pot pun. They got to make some joke about it. Like, it's almost like they're cannabophobic, right? Like homophobes. You know how like homophobes can't be around gay people and they uncomfortably giggle or get angry or upset when they're around gay people? It's like that. They're cannabophobic. Whenever marijuana is brought up in a conversation, it makes them uncomfortable and afraid and they can't even talk to it. And so, I wanted to pause here just so that you get this next part of this, because this is the part that that really made me take notice.
In what way are you not getting your son high?
Well, the tincture that I give him has a very low level amount of THC in it, and that's the psychoactive part of the plant.
Judy knew she'd be shocking her friends.
You know the culture we live in, though, right?
I know.
Just say no, gateway drug. Mm-hmm. What do their faces look like the first time you say you're doing what you're doing?
It's like this. Like if they're processing it, like what? I think.
And this is that's why I wanted to stop at this point, because first of all, notice his question. You know the culture we live in, though, right? Just say no, gateway drug. What do their faces look like when you tell them you're doing what you're doing? Like, he can't even bring himself to say, what do their faces look like when you tell them you're giving your child cannabis as medicine? He can't even say it, that you're doing what you're doing, right? That shows you the internal bias that we get sometimes in the media here. They can't even phrase the question in an honest and responsible way. And the mom's response to it, you know, they're processing, like, does not compute. Well, it's not surprising that it does not compute. And when you think about it, how odd it is, how weird of a society we live in, where a mom taking a non-toxic herb and getting an oil from it to treat her son is seen as strange, right? I mean, we live in a completely artificial world where plastic news anchors with fake boobs are advertising artificial sweeteners and artificial colorings and artificial flavorings. And we go, everything about our world is artificial. I mean, if you brought this kid back to, you know, native cultures anywhere in the world who was having problems like this, one, they might think he was inhabited by spirits, but whatever. Still, their first thought would be to use nature to help fix that. And the idea that someone would show up with a plastic bottle and pull a processed pill out to take care of that. Think about what we consider to be completely natural, that doesn't raise any eyebrows, that doesn't cause ABC News 2020 to have to go do some big expose and be shocked about what the parent is doing. We regularly give kids meth. We regularly give kids methamphetamines in the form of Adderall and other prescription drugs for their disorders. In fact, that was one of the drugs that she rejected, that this mom rejected in favor of medical cannabis, as they suggested some of these methamphetamines, some of these opioid, these beta blockers, some of the, all sorts of different drugs that when you take them, she found the antipsychotics were having no real effect for her kid. And I'm sure they had all sorts of side effects for the kid. You know, we've heard the story with Brave Michaela, where she tried other medicines and it just made her a zombie, just made her all doped up. And, you know, that's what they call dope, is those drugs. Those are the drugs that dope you up. People go and turn to medical marijuana because they don't want to be doped up. They want to have a quality of life. They want to be clear-headed. This idea that people have that you smoke pot and your personality changes and become lethargic and uninterested and unconcerned with the world is bunk. It's complete bunk. It's a slacker stoner stereotype left over from movies from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. You cannot live with that stereotype in the world of Michael Phelps and Sir Richard Branson and Carl Sagan and so many of the people, marijuanamajority.com, so many of the people who either use or support legalization, it just won't hold up anymore. Anyway, sorry for the mini rant. Let me get back to the video.
If they look at the whole picture and they see what has happened with my child over the years and how close we have come to losing him. Literally. It's really just giving them medicine to treat a symptom.
But there are no double-blind studies, the gold standard of scientific tests, to have proven or even shown that marijuana does anything for kids with autism or OCD.
How young is too young to be using medicinal marijuana?
How young is too young to use aspirin? How young is too young to use penicillin?
A retired physician and professor at Harvard Medical School, Lester Grinspoon, wrote the book on marijuana, literally. In the 70s, his son Danny, who had cancer, used the drug to counter the pain of his chemotherapy before his death. Now, he hears from mothers like Miko and Judy, but even he can't say it'll work.
I can't guarantee it's going to do anything, but I can tell you, it isn't going to harm him. It is remarkably non-toxic.
You understand how some people hear of a boy taking marijuana and they're going, that doesn't seem right.
It's because we have been brainwashed about this substance. There will come a time when people will recognize that this is a wonder drug of our times. It does so much in terms of relieving some of the symptoms which are very difficult for parents to deal with, let alone the child.
I think the medical marijuana.
All right, before we get to the guy who's all afraid here, bravo, Dr. Lester Grinspoon, once again, of course, has been a guest on this show, big friend of the show, and it's good to see him getting some play on ABC News, and I love his response. How young is too young for aspirin? How young is too young for penicillin? When you consider all of the drugs that we accept the risk for, I mean, when you're talking about putting a kid through chemotherapy, whether or not that kid's smoking weed seems to be the least of that kid's issues, right? There's all sorts of drugs that we accept as safe for use for children that are so much more harmful than marijuana could possibly be. It's amazing that we have to keep pounding this into people's heads to understand, but there's 75 years of prohibition reefer madness that we got to fight, so we're going to keep fighting it. Speaking of,
might actually be making their symptoms worse. The medical marijuana might just kind of be sedating them and not really addressing the underlying issues.
Child psychiatrist Dr. Steven Sager at the ECHO Teen Substance Abuse Facility argues that this alternative treatment does present a serious risk for these kids.
With marijuana, there's clear problems that can come up with it, including concentration problems, anxiety, depression. I think with a child.
Did you see that kid at the start of this episode? Did you see him banging on the floor and screaming? And I think concentration problems are, you know, the least of his issues here. And as the mom was saying, it seems to help him with his concentration.
You need to be ultra cautious.
You know who else doesn't think marijuana for kids is such a hot idea? 12-year-old Griffin.
Griffin, what was it like when you first heard that you might be taking medical marijuana?
It was very, very scary, and I didn't want to take it, and I kept telling my mom, I don't want to.
Chris Cortez says her son's been diagnosed with ADHD and has trouble focusing in class.
Teachers are very frustrated with Griffin.
Very frustrated.
How do they express that frustration, Griffin?
Yelling. Lots and lots of yelling.
What's it like when you feel like a teacher has given up on you?
It makes you feel bad. It makes you feel like you're a really bad person.
It upsets me. It makes me want to cry.
When Griffin was first diagnosed, he was prescribed Ritalin, but Chris wouldn't give it to him. She says she'll feel more comfortable giving him medical marijuana because it's an organic substance.
I don't want him to take any kind of manufactured drugs, and I kind of went back and forth on it because I don't want people to be upset with me, but then I had to realize that it doesn't matter what other people think. It's my son's health that matters.
What do you hope medical marijuana will do for Griffin?
I hope it helps him to concentrate more so he can learn better in school.
That outcome might not mesh with our image of what young people using marijuana are like in school. But Chris looks forward to starting Griffin on a marijuana regimen before the beginning of the next school year, despite his concerns.
I reassured him that even if it wasn't medical marijuana and it was Ritalin or something else, that he would still be scared. No matter what it is, he's still going to be a little scared until he actually tries it.
As for Ryan, Judy is the first to say that medical marijuana hasn't cured her son.
It's just a piece of the puzzle. It's like, it's almost like it's a Band-Aid. When it's difficult to reason with him because he's so upset, that's tough. It's very difficult to see him like that. And that is why I turn to this alternative treatment.
As she's become an advocate for its use on kids, speaking to other families about the drug, Judy says she's also explored another side of marijuana with her son, the side we're more familiar with.
I don't want my son to be high. But he hasn't had a chance to feel euphoria for many, many years. He's lost all his friends. And so I want him to have a little bit of the THC. I really do. I want him to feel some of that euphoria.
So there you go. That's the ABC News Investigates Medical Marijuana for Children. And I noticed that from noticing more stories on Brave Michaela. We'll have an update on Michaela's story in hour two here at Toker Talk Radio when we come back at 4 o'clock Pacific time. Brian's noted some news stories coming up on that. CNN's picked up on it, ABC News, and more. So stick around. Radical Rant is next.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Have you considered medical marijuana? Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancers, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome, as well as anecdotal evidence suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects of medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reactions, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairment, appetite increase, and in 37 states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana. It's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you.
There is a peaceful solution called a peace revolution. And now let's take back America.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Like millions of freedom-loving Americans, I'm a marijuana smoker, and I don't think that that should be any of the government's business. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. The next time you light up, take the time to let your elected officials know how you feel. It's time we legalize marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at NORML.org.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Huffington Post's Lucia Graves has been doing some stellar reporting on the marijuana issue as of late, and I wanted to share something she wrote in a piece today called Washington Dispensary Owners Against Marijuana Legalization. This is from Lucia Graves. Though one might assume that legalization would be opposed primarily by law enforcement and social conservatives, nearly all the money donated to fight the ballot measure in Washington came not from such groups, but rather from the existing medical marijuana industry, according to state campaign contribution filings. The main group formed to oppose the legalization ballot measure, No on I-502, was directed by Steve Sarich, a patient's rights advocate who runs a local dispensary, or access point, as he calls it. He says neither he nor his campaign's contributors oppose the measure for financial reasons. Quote, "There may be a few that are making some money," he told Huffington Post Monday, "but most of them are just paying the rent," end quote. Paying the rent no longer considered a financial reason? Jesus, Steve, the actual description for this kind of political economic behavior is called rent seeking. Look, when you're the maker of buggy whips in 1910, it doesn't matter if buggy whip sales fund your vacation home in Florida or they're just barely keeping porridge on the table. You're not going to like those horseless carriages Henry Ford keeps cranking out. But at least the buggy whip manufacturers never raised any money to influence people to vote in favor of imprisoning people with Model Ts. Go back to Lucia's reporting on this. Michael Lick, whose Washington dispensary Urban Roots has had more than 1,000 patients since opening in April, did, telling the Seattle Stranger's Dominic Holden that he opposes I-502 because he fears it would quash the industry. Wow. Imagine opening any business and getting 1,000 customers in 8 months. Yeah, I'd want to protect that cash cow too. Just like the Emerald Triangle growers in California did 2 years prior. Again, back to Lucia's reporting. A similar dynamic has played out in California's so-called Emerald Triangle, Mendocino, Humboldt, and Trinity, a cluster of northwestern counties specializing in pot cultivation since the mid-70s, where growers and sellers largely opposed an in-state marijuana legalization initiative in 2010. The implicit reasoning was that industry-style mass production would damage the local economy, as marijuana is the lifeblood crop for thousands of residents in the area. Yeah, and I am sympathetic to the tales of small family growers. I really am. American manufacturing is all but gone, and the opportunities to make a decent living for yourself and your family are few. But that industry, that local economy, can only exist in its current form through an artificial price support that is purchased in the years that pot growers and consumers spend in prison, and the lives that are derailed, destroyed, and deceased fighting this war on drugs. I don't fault anybody for playing the game. You know, like Bill Maher says, you can hate the designated hitter rule in baseball, but until it's changed, every manager of every club is going to use it. However, playing the game and supporting the game are two different things. I have friends who are paying the rent through prohibition profit, slinging bags and growing weed, but they also volunteer and donate to legalization campaigns and organizations. Now, while some of them will say, well, I'm just working to put myself out of business, in truth, they're just gaining contacts and education for the new era of legal marijuana that will make them far more money with far less risk in the long term. You could call them the buggy whip manufacturers who are ready to retool the factory to make tires. Let's go back to Lucia Graves from Huffington Post. Heather Houghton, a manager with Evergreen Holistic Center, denied contributing money against I-502 for financial reasons, saying the initiative's driving provision, which creates a cutoff for drivers who have more than 5 nanograms of active THC per milliliter of blood, could put patients at risk of prosecution. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the fig leaf all those stoners against this legalization get to use in Washington. The per se DUID. It's not all their financial interest. No. It's their altruism that made them oppose legalization. The funny thing is that I've visited a whole lot of dispensaries all over the West, and it's rare that I ever see any education or warnings about using medical marijuana and driving. These dispensaries that are so worried their customers, patients, are going to get a DUID for driving around town with 5 nanograms of active THC in their bloodstreams were strangely silent prior to I-502 about the dangers of DUID for driving around town with any measurable THC in your blood or any inactive THC metabolites in your urine. Now, it's not like marijuana DUIDs didn't happen. Washington and the other 49 states all have laws against driving under the influence of drugs. Now that I-502 has passed, I'm seeing some literature and some web postings about how to avoid a DUID after I-502, which really amounts to how to avoid a DUID in any state under any law. One more from Lucia Graves. Truck Hallnagel, a spokesman for Conscious Care Cooperative in northern Seattle, also dismissed the notion that his dispensary fought the measure out of self-interest, saying that while the law does take away some patient rights, he again cited the provision on driving, as if medical marijuana patients had the right to drive around with greater than 5 nanograms of active THC in their systems. Now, they did have a right to require the prosecution to prove impairment rather than get automatic proof with a greater than 5 nanogram test result. But that wasn't a right just for patients exclusively. That was a right for all cannabis consumers. This exemplifies that patient entitlement syndrome that I've spoken about, where people that are frequent marijuana consumers for medical reasons somehow think they are different from and more special than the healthy people who are also frequent marijuana consumers. I've actually heard things like, well, you know, patients build up a tolerance to the impairing effects of THC, as if someone who's healthy and smokes just as often still giggles like a college kid taking his first puff. People with this patient entitlement syndrome have actually told me they could have supported I-502 if only it had an exception for the per se limit for patients. Now, I may be a healthy and frequent pot smoker, But I also have the utmost in compassion for patients. I've read more studies, interviewed more doctors, and talked to more patients than most people. I've experienced the miracle of cannabis medicine first, second, and third hand. However, I also get to talk with patients in places other than the West Coast and other than Colorado who will always be criminals until we push legalization eastward. I get to talk to patients in the West Coast and Colorado who are unfortunate enough to be stricken with something not on the Washington, Colorado, and Oregon approved condition lists. And thanks to I-502, every patient dealing with PTSD, anxiety, depression, insomnia, mild pain, moderate cramps, occasional nausea, sexual dysfunction, and a whole bunch of other ailments not on Washington's condition list will be legal to possess and use marijuana on December 6th. Every patient will be legal without spending $150 on a doctor's permission slip. And best of all, the phrase, "I'm a patient, not a criminal," will become nonsense. If there are going to be per se DUID laws, you can oppose them. I understand opposing it. It's not a scientific way of determining whether someone is impaired. It's not a scientific way of determining whether or not all people have recently toked. I understand the science behind it. Like I said, I've read all of the studies. But in those studies, it doesn't say, well, someone with 5 nanograms per milliliter who's just getting high can't drive, but someone with 5 nanograms per milliliter who has cancer can. That's not the way it works. The effect of marijuana on your reflexes, the effect of marijuana on your judgment, on your behavior, on anything you want to call it, however you want to measure it, is the same whether you're healthy or sick. So go ahead and oppose I-502, but these people who opposed it and wanted an exemption just for patients are proving to you where their allegiances lie. They're in the I gots mine crowd. We gots ours. We gots what we gots, and we don't want anyone to mess with it. Well, it's time for that kind of thinking to end, because we have passed marijuana legalization in Washington State, and we've passed legalization in Colorado. And the time is now to continue moving forward with marijuana legalization. I disagree with MPP's Rob Campia that we need to wait till 2016 for marijuana legalization in the state of Oregon or the state of California. I believe the time is ripe. I believe our opponent is on the ropes, and it's not time to back off and let him catch his breath. It's time to knock him out. It's time for prohibition to finally end. The momentum is on our side. In Oregon, they're going to be seeing so many of the results from marijuana legalization with 502 that they will be compelled to do something about it. Our state's largest newspaper is already basically demanding the legislature to do something reasonable about legalizing marijuana before people like us come up with something they would consider to be unreasonable. And you know that the people that are making hand over fist money in California aren't about to see their market share get diluted by the people in Washington and Colorado that are now allowed to sell to everyone, even without a doctor's excuse note. No, California is going to get right in line, and we're going to legalize on the West Coast in 2014, because while it might be the best chance, while we might get 58% in 2016, I believe we can get 52% in 2014. And I'm sticking to that. We can do this. Oregon doesn't cost that much to legalize. Our signatures don't cost that much. Our ad buys don't cost that much. We vote by mail. We're going to do it. Hey, that's all the time we got. And that's plenty of ranting for 1 hour. Thanks for joining us. We're going to stay tuned for hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. We got more stories, more news, headlines out of Mexico and other places, and updates on Brave Michaela, the 7-year-old medical marijuana patient here in Oregon. For Brian the Red and everybody associated with the Russ Belville Show, thanks for joining us. I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
smoke it and it goes down smooth. Hey!